This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 4th of January 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 4th of January 2013. Which this week has been edited by Keith and Linda Vincent. And firstly, wish you a very warm welcome to our first recording of 2013. And of course, we wish you all a happy and healthy new year. Your readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now we start with what's on, and there's a few theatre announcements. Firstly, at the Plaza Theatre Romsey, The King's New Clothes is running from the 10th to the 26th of January on Thursdays to Sundays only at 7:30. And if you want details, the box office for the Plaza Theatre is 01794 512987. That's 01794 512987. At the Mayflower Southampton, Jack and the Beanstalk is on until Saturday, January the 19th at various times, and the box office for the Mayflower is 02380 711 811. That's 02380 711 811. The Haymarket Theatre at Basingstoke has a performance called Voice of the Heart, and it's Karen Carpenter is performing on Saturday the 12th of January at 7:30. And the box office for the Haymarket is 01256 844244. That's 01256 844244. And lastly, at the Salisbury Playhouse, Spread a Little Happiness is on until January the 19th. And the box office for the Salisbury Playhouse is 01722 320333. That's 01722 320333. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 4th of January at 8:09 a.m. and begins at 4:13 p.m. On Wednesday the 9th of January it ends at 8:07 a.m. and begins at 4:20 p.m. Now remember, if you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. Now, the main headlines this week: County struck gold during Olympics, community stalwarts are unsung heroes in honours, and arsonist suspected of city centre fires. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Claire?
County struck gold during Olympics. Hampshire reaped huge rewards from last summer's Olympics, boosting the local economy by £36 million, according to county chiefs. Local businesses won 183 different contracts, figures from the Olympics Delivery Authority reveal. Among them was a deal for Hillier's Garden Centre to supply 4,000 trees in the Olympic Park in London, creating a growing Hampshire legacy. Meanwhile, the Olympic torch spent more time in Hampshire than any other county, with 450,000 residents lining the streets and boosting the local economy by an estimated £10 million, according to a report to the County Council's Culture, Communities and Rural Affairs Select Committee. Councillor Keith Chapman, who is responsible for leisure services at the County Council, said, "The Olympic may be behind us, but it has left a fantastic legacy, not only in Hampshire, but throughout the country as a whole. The achievements of Team GB Olympic and Paralympic athletes have inspired the nation, as well as helping to change public perceptions around disability and wider health and well-being issues. Dozens of Olympic events were held throughout the county, including Winchester Live, which saw a total of 8,000 people watch the opening and closing ceremonies on big screens put up in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral. Organisers also reported crowds of up to 2,000 people at some key medal-winning highlights for Team GB. Chris Turner, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, said the Olympics had boosted trade in the city. Professor Turner said, "I think the way the city managed the torch relay and the big screen in the cathedral close meant there was a regular and excited crowd coming into the city. More retailers and food eateries that are our members were very positive about the summer and feel it was managed with great aplomb." In addition to the financial boost and feel-good factor, crime levels dropped across the county by 16% during the Olympics and 10% during the Paralympics. Hampshire had 32 Olympians, more than any other county, and around 10% of the Team GB medals in both the Olympics and Paralympics came from 44 athletes with links to Hampshire. Their haul of 4 gold, 3 silver and 10 bronze medals makes Hampshire the second most successful Olympic county after Yorkshire. Meanwhile, 491 schools took part in a Get Set Network, an education programme to celebrate London 2012 in schools. Now, county chiefs are looking at ways to extend the benefits, including inspiring young and old to become more active. Proposals include working with schools and the military to increase access to their sports facilities and developing a cycling strategy.
Community stalwarts are unsung heroes in honours. Hampshire's community champions have been honoured for doing their bit to help others. They join celebrities, sportspeople and professionals who have been rewarded in the New Year's honours list. Hermione Golding has been awarded a British Empire Medal for services to charity and the community in Winchester. She came to Winchester in 1992 and almost immediately began working as a support worker for the Winchester Alliance for Mental Health, befriending service users. Mrs. Golding, 76, said, "We acted as family or friends would to help people. We were rather a motley bunch of housewives and retired people, but it was very rewarding work. My husband Ben and I both did it for 10 years, and it was delightful to get to know people through it and a pleasure to do. It is wonderful and a great privilege to receive this award. But I feel very embarrassed by this because there are so many other people who just do much more than I do, and I just happen to have been picked out. Winchester is bulging with people who do an awful lot for charity." Mrs. Golding, who grew up in Bath, has travelled the world as her father and husband were both in the Royal Navy, and she has helped whomever she could along the way. She added, "When I lived in Hong Kong, I helped at a crippled children's home, and in Singapore I helped at a blind school. I feel I have been jolly lucky in life, so it's nice to be able to do something for other people." Naomi House fundraiser Lucy Jane Lewis has been awarded an MBE for her services to the Sutton Scotney Hospice and the charitable giving sector. Mrs. Lewis, who lives in Sway, near Lymington, joined the charity's New Forest Committee 16 years ago and has helped raise thousands of pounds to keep the Hospice for Life Limited Children running. She said, "I am overwhelmed to have an MBE, and I feel it's down to lots of other people's efforts and support. The committee is brilliant, and the community have been fantastic to us. Mrs. Lewis, a graphic designer, added, "It's been a pleasure and a joy to do something where you tangibly see what happens to the money you raise, whether it becomes something for the sensory room, a hoist, or new beds. I'm proud to be doing something so unbelievably worthwhile." Meanwhile, John Underhill was also awarded an MBE for voluntary services to the Royal British Legion in Hampshire. Mr. Underhill, who runs logistics company Dockham European, began helping the Legion 10 years ago by using his trucks as support vehicles in the RBL Pedal to Paris charity cycle. He was then asked to help organise the RBL's 90th anniversary celebrations in 2011, after staging a successful concert at Salisbury Cathedral in 2010, which raised £10,000 for the RBL. Mr. Underhill, who lives near Fordingbridge, went on to organise a concert at almost every cathedral in the country, a total of 40, to mark the celebrations, including at Winchester and as far afield as the Falklands and Gibraltar. Others receiving honours in Hampshire included Scout leader Carolyn Derbyshire, who becomes an MBE after spending 3 decades overseeing scout groups in Chandler's Ford, and is currently district commissioner. The 66-year-old, who was also a nurse for more than 45 years, has helped organise countless community events and scouting activities over 30 years. Also honoured is Jacqueline Rowley, who is made BEM for services to Eastleigh Friends of People with a Learning Disability. The social support group helps families and carers with a son or daughter with a learning disability, living at home or in supported living within Eastleigh. Consultant nurse David Ferguson has been made an MBE for dedicating his career to improving care for mentally ill patients with learning disabilities. The 55-year-old from Bishopstoke, who is due to take early retirement from his role at Southern Health in March, has been working in the field for more than 30 years. Hampshire Police Inspector Julie Fry becomes an MBE for her work in ensuring increased reporting of hate crime and improved confidence in policing from the lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender community. Tracy McAdam, manager of Eastleigh College House, which caters for people with moderate learning disabilities, has been made MBE for her services to education. And that article is followed by another linked to it, "And County's Olympic Heroes Are Recognised." They are Hampshire's very own golden wonders, and now their achievements have also been rewarded in the New Year's Honours List. Britain's most successful ever sailing Olympian, Ben Ainslie, has been given a knighthood. Cyclist Danny King has been rewarded with an MBE after she won gold in the team pursuit at the Olympic Velodrome, setting a world record. Also receiving an MBE is Southampton's Helena Lucas, who won Britain's first ever Paralympic sailing gold. It was also revealed that 35-year-old Ben is set to be awarded the freedom of his hometown, Lymington. Ben had been tipped to receive a knighthood ever since he won his 4th gold medal at the London Olympics in August. His hard-fought victory in the Finn class at Weymouth followed similar successes at the 2000 Games in Sydney, the 2004 Olympics in Athens, and the 2008 contest in Beijing. These and a silver he won in Atlanta in 1996 make him the most decorated sailor in Olympic history. Former Hamble Community Sports College pupil Danny, 22, also becomes an MBE after she, along with teammates Joe Rousel and Laura Trott, smashed their world record for the sixth time to take gold in the team pursuit. Being made an MBE also topped off an amazing year for Helena Lucas. The gold medalist gained Team GB's first Paralympic sailing medal at Weymouth in the single-handed small keelboat class at the regatta.
Arsonist suspected of city centre fires. Police are investigating three suspected arson attacks in Winchester city centre on Tuesday evening. A man was arrested close to the scene and was being held in custody on suspicion of starting the fires. Firefighters were first called to Phase 8 clothes shop on the corner of Parchment Street and the High Street at 7 p.m. after a commercial bin was set alight and pushed through a window, causing serious damage inside. Shortly afterwards, fire crews were called to the historic 13th century deanery in Winchester Cathedral Close, where it is believed a box of books and cardboard were set on fire. Some 120 people were evacuated from the nearby open-air ice rink as a precaution. The flames caused damage estimated at £2,000 to £3,000 to the wooden doors of the listed medieval building and to a number of second-hand books, the value of which has not yet been established. The book sale in the deanery is a valuable source of income for music in the cathedral. The dean, the Very Reverend James Atwell, was not in at the time, and the three residents living in an upstairs flat were unharmed. A third fire was then discovered in the yard next to the Porthouse pub on Upper Brook Street, but the flames were quickly put out thanks to the quick action of chefs from the Bengal Sage restaurant. Chief Inspector James Fulton, Winchester Area Police Commander, speaking outside Phase 8, said, "As the incident covers three sites, one historic, one business, and a near-miss at a restaurant, the impact on a range of people is significant. Fortunately, nobody was hurt, but clearly the potential was there, and we will be following all lines of inquiry this morning to secure evidence." A man, believed to be in his late 40s, was arrested close to the scene of the fires on Tuesday evening and was taken to North Walls Police Station. Officers have spoken to a number of witnesses, but anyone with information should contact Winchester Police Station on 101. A spokesman for Phase 8 said on Wednesday morning that staff had not been let into the building as it was still being treated as a crime scene. She said, "We have no idea how much damage has been caused or how long we will have to close for because we've not been allowed in yet." And there are, of course, photographs of the gutted Phase 8 and of the deanery looking very sad with a heap of half-burnt books and paper outside.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment and first person. So firstly, the death announcements for this week, 4th of January 2013. Clark, Dorothy Elizabeth Clark, died at Southampton General Hospital on the 21st of December. Davies, Dorothy Mary Davies, died peacefully on the 23rd of December, aged 87. Edwards, Margaret Ann Edwards, died peacefully at home on the 15th of December, aged 85. Fielding, Amanda Claire Fielding, died peacefully on the 21st of December. Haynes, Donat George Haynes, died suddenly at home on the 16th of December, aged 70. Hogg, Claire Elizabeth Hogg, died in hospital in Hereford on the 26th of December, aged 51. Jones, Carol Ann Jones, died suddenly in hospital, aged 66. Marshall, Vera Marshall, formerly of Sparshot, died peacefully at Chandler's Ford Nursing Home, aged 89. Oates, Betty Oates of Four Marks, died in Pax Hill Nursing Home, aged 87. Rickman, Kenneth Rickman, died peacefully in hospital, aged 76. Sewell, Angela Sewell, died in hospital after a short illness, aged 84. Snag, Peter Harold Snag, died on the 22nd of December following a short illness. And Woodley, Margaret Helen Woodley, died on the 27th of December. Now we move on to Christian comments, going to be read by Claire. Claire.
This is headed Another Year of High Potential and is written by Canon Rowley Ream. Back in the 1970s, Newton's cradles were all the rage. A set of steel balls suspended on a frame. You lifted one up at one end and then released it to set off the click-clack of perpetual motion. It provided an excellent demonstration of what we learned at school, of potential energy turning into the energy of motion or kinetic energy. As we also learned, the process couldn't actually go on perpetually because of things like air resistance and energy being lost as heat. Quite soon you would have to start the whole thing off again, much to the annoyance of other family members. No wonder they went out of fashion. The start of the new year can feel like one of these beginnings. Another year of high potential arrives. It will swing down as surely as tick follows tock, setting off another train of events. We shall be caught up in the motion, for better or worse, until we arrive with slightly less energy at the start of 2014. However, another cradle reminds us that this is only a feeling. Human beings can find an energy which is not simply part of a decaying system of forces. As we move on from our Christmas festivities, let's not forget the story which has so much to teach us. The child lying in the manger could have been destroyed by Herod's purge, but was not, thanks to his parents' care and the wisdom of the Magi. The old system did not triumph. Mary, Joseph, and the Magi show us that we each have power over the system. Each one of us is a centre of energy, with the potential to be renewed daily in holy and life-giving spirit. We're not destined for conformity or to be bound by the inevitable. We have more power than we know to affect events for good. And the baby at the centre of the story has the most potential of all. He will grow up to be filled with Holy Spirit. With this power, he will take on disease, hunger, violence, and ignorance. Even when he seems to be the victim of events, he will find a way to act with perfect freedom. That is why the Church's prayer at Christmas is that this Christ-like life is born in us. The life that Jesus breathed, he brought for everyone to share. It is called everlasting life because it cannot be defeated by the erosion of time and the seemingly endless tide of events. And that was written by Canon Rowley Ream.
Thank you, Claire. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Robin, can you start us off, please?
The first letter is from Michael Radford of Mitchell Deaver with the title Absence of Third-Party Funds Highlights Serious Deficiency. The recent publicity over the problems of prospect auction rooms, coupled with the disappearing landlord and the Christmas Club funds at Shrewton, highlight a serious deficiency both in the law and practice. In both cases, it seems that money due to third parties, which should have been held in trust for them, has been misappropriated. I imagine that both businesses had accountants and solicitors who are required by law to hold third-party funds in separate clients' accounts. They must have been aware of the manner of their clients' trading, and apart from their professional responsibilities to advise their clients not to mix up business funds with third-party funds, common sense dictates that they should do so. I accept that their clients could have ignored such advice. Both businesses must also have had bank accounts, and banks advertise their services as business advisers. Their banks must, or should, have known the manner in which their customers' accounts were handled. Banks normally ask for copies of their customers' annual accounts. So why did they not advise their customers to open separate accounts to hold third-party funds? I admit to some practical knowledge of the behaviour of banks, because many years ago I acted as liquidator of a car auctioneer, which, after a period of unprofitable trading, had a good sale, used the proceeds to pay off its bank overdraft, and closed the business, leaving members of the public and a local car dealer in the cold. I wrote to the bank, inquiring as to why they did not suggest to their customer that they open a client's account. In their response, they stated that they did not know the nature of the customer's business, despite the fact that its name was X Motor Auctions Limited. I believe that legislation should be introduced requiring businesses receiving third-party monies, whether by way of deposits or proceeds of sales, to hold the funds in a separate client's account, and not to use that money to fund their businesses or any other purpose apart from reimbursing their customers either by payment where appropriate or payment for work carried out as and when that work is completed. Perhaps Mr. Brine might care to suggest it to the Prime Minister. Michael Radford, Church Street, Micheldeva.
This letter is entitled Futile Sacrifice of a Precious Asset and comes from Douglas Patterson, the chairman of Keep Hampshire Green. Bob Whitmarsh needs to face up to an inconvenient truth. Many people care at least as much as he does about cutting carbon emissions, but see wind turbines marching across the Hampshire landscape as a futile sacrifice of a precious asset. It is precisely the urgency of the matter which makes the sacrifice so pointless. The big issue is how to rapidly reduce dependence on coal, the worst polluter worldwide. Expensive wind turbines on a marginal site can simply mean more coal elsewhere. Germany has staked its future on unpredictable wind and solar resources, which, combined with its abandonment of nuclear, means it is now rushing into coal power to fill the gaps. Electricity costs are soaring into the bargain, pushing industrial production to China and India, with even greater dependence on coal. Ironically, America's switch to gas has brought about significant falls in carbon emissions because gas has half the emissions of coal. In answer to Rob Parker, The Chronicle, December the 20th, I am not qualified to endorse fracking in Britain. What I actually said was this: like it or not, fracking in America has transformed the world's energy markets. We cannot ignore this fact. Gas can be a stepping stone to nuclear and more predictable renewals. The intermittency of wind, however, has a chaotic effect on energy markets, which can actually increase carbon emissions. A much more worrying effect of the fracking revolution is the falling global coal price, which, unless we use gas wisely, will lead to yet more emissions. ADF's interest in Hampshire is in scooping up the hugely valuable ROC subsidies. It is clear that the environmental and energy contribution of their windmills is negligible. Even if wind did make a worthwhile contribution, surely it would be better to harness these financial resources for our communities through locally based renewable schemes. It seems Mr. Whitmarsh and his friends would like to assist in transferring substantial funds from our pockets to the coffers of a huge foreign corporation. Now that is what I call bonkers. Douglas Patterson, Chairman, Keep Hampshire Green, Hunton Grange Farm, Sutton Scotney.
And on the same subject, Ray Cobbett from Emsworth writes, Hampshire faces some stark choices. Sir, if needed, I can reassure correspondent Jerry By that the Friends of the Earth are not in favour of building wind farms in protected areas such as areas of outstanding natural beauty. His allusion to comments on wind farms by some members of the royal family is somewhat curious. In 2010, the Crown Estates, which own all the seabeds around Britain, approved a major expansion in the offshore wind farms, of which the Navitas Array, to which he also refers, is a part. Pretty much all of the landscape of Britain is man-made. Hampshire, for example, was a heavily wooded county until the kings of the day decided we needed a navy. Had the likes of Mr. By been around in the late Middle Ages, the Industrial Revolution would probably have passed us by, as it required water power delivered by windmills. As Jock MacDonald wrote in his recent letter, Hampshire, with some of the highest carbon footprints in the country, faces stark choices. Wind power is the most mature of the present renewable technologies and will shortly compete with some carbon-based sources. And that's from Ray Cobbett, Beach Road, Emsworth.
Alternative therapy was costly mistake. Excuse me. That's the heading of this letter. Sir, following the recent judicial ruling that 7-year-old Neon Roberts undergo conventional radiotherapy treatment for his brain tumour against the wishes of his mother, the Sunday Times ran a story about alternative therapies, showing that their clinical efficacy has not been proven and some are disputed by experts in the field. In particular, they examined the alternative therapies offered by Dr. Julian Kenyon at the Dove Clinic in Twyford. About 15 years ago, my wife was suffering a condition which did not respond well to conventional medicine, and by chance, we were introduced to the Dove Clinic by a friend who happened to work there. Although sceptical, we decided to consider the recommendation, since her condition was one for which they claimed to have experience and success, and Dr. Kenyon was very confident of a successful outcome. The initial estimate for treatment was about £200 for a consultation and prescription, which seemed high, but worth it if it was going to alleviate my wife's symptoms. But we were presented with a bill for just under £500 after Dr. Kenyon decided a blood test was required, which he claimed showed clumping of cells which needed treatment, and then prescribed a wider range of homeopathic treatments than had been anticipated. The treatment proved ineffective. We discussed our experience with our GP, who was appalled, not only with the fees, but particularly with the results of the blood test, which he sent to the haematology lab at the RHCH, which reported clumping of cells was perfectly normal. Our GP was so shocked by what he considered was quackery, that he asked us to file a complaint which he would refer to the General Medical Council. But, with reluctance, we decided not to proceed, given that personal friendship was involved. With hindsight, we were wrong to keep quiet, since a succession of other people may have also been taken in, and some people may have been charged considerably more. The Sunday Times reported fees of up to £10,000 charged in some centres for alternative cancer treatments. The view of our GP was that such therapies were effective only in decreasing the value of the person's estate. Given our adverse experience and the serious concerns raised, we would urge anybody considering alternative therapies for which large fees are being charged to discuss the clinical merits with their GP beforehand, rather than afterwards, as we made the expensive mistake in doing. And the name and address of this writer has been withheld, although they live in Winchester.
And returning to the subject of wind power, Alec Curtis of Norton Sutton Scotney says HCC support would smack of hypocrisy. Hampshire County Council recently decided to ban wind farms on their own land because, as Councillor Mel Kendall said, "We believe large-scale wind turbines do not provide a sufficient benefit to justify the loss of some of our most prized, undeveloped countryside." Presumably, this will rule out any form of council support for the proposed EDF wind farm scheme at the rural location of Bullington, because for it to consider any element of support for such a large, ineffective development, motivated primarily by the availability of lucrative subsidies and commercially driven opportunism, would surely be the ultimate in hypocrisy. Alec Curtis, Norton, Sutton Scotney.
And now for a rather more jolly letter from Councillor Peter Edgar, filling the high street with festive joy. "What an absolute pleasure it was to listen to the Hampshire Youth Band playing in Winchester High Street before Christmas. The band is part of the Hampshire Music Service, designated lead member of the Hampshire Music Hub. This hub enables 55,000 young people to perform, provides 3,000 hours of tuition a week, and has 70 ensembles across Hampshire. In my 8th year as a county councillor, I so enjoy the seasonal celebrations in our schools. But the icing on the Christmas cake is this massive wind band of present and past members of Hampshire Music Service, playing all the old favourites with gusto. Despite awful weather, they filled the whole high street with festive joy. Successful concerts can only be achieved with dedicated instructors, and we owe a great deal to these musicians who are passing on to young people of all abilities their musical skills and love of music. The aim of the Hampshire Music Service is making music together, with the motto, participate, enjoy, achieve. Anyone in Winchester at Christmas would have no doubt this motto is extremely apt. Well done to all those young people who enjoy making music and give such pleasure to the rest of us. Councillor Peter Edgar, Hampshire County Council Assistant Executive Member for Education, The Castle, Winchester."
And there's another happy story, I'm glad to say. This is written by Councillor Eileen Berry, who has headed it, "Bear That Brought Joy at Christmas." "Sir, I would very much like to thank whoever put the beautiful big brown teddy bear in the Rotary raffle, because it was such an unusual looking bear, and I felt that if I bought enough raffle tickets, it could be mine. Well, I didn't win it, and was very disappointed. Within 2 days, I had a call from Winchester Rotary Club, saying that the bear had not been claimed and that several people had commented that I absolutely loved the bear and could find a home for it. They kindly gave me the bear. Well, it is Christmas and one kindness deserves another. So I took the bear to a children's party in the March Hare, and all their names were put into a hat. A little girl's name came out, and she came running into where the festivities were going on, absolutely delighted with her bear. I said to her, "Do you know, if you love that bear, it will love you back." It was wonderful to see her nestle her head into its face and give, as all children do, unconditional love. And that is how it should be. So, a little bit of Christmas, which started with a bear that was not claimed, ended so happily for a little girl. Councillor Eileen Berry, Week, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we're going back 150 years, I think, Robin.
Yes, there are two items. 150 years ago, 1863. Tuesday, by order of the Honourable W. Cooper, First Commissioner of Works and Public Buildings, Messrs. Pullen, Horn and Eversfield submitted to public auction at the Government Store Yard, Great Smith Street, the trappings, funeral equipments and furniture used for the funeral of the late Duke of Wellington in November 1852, including ornaments used for the lying in state at Chelsea Hospital, which were of the most costly and elaborate description. The second item, in proof of the large increase of the general business of the Court of Bankruptcy, we may mention that whereas under the former system the London court averaged from 800 to 1,000 per annum, the number for the last year reached the formidable total of 3,306. The subject of pauper cases has not escaped attention. It appears that the solicitor appointed to conduct these cases in London has during the last year received about £5,000.
75 years ago, 1938. Today sees the dawning of a new year. A year we hope and trust of renewed prosperity and happiness to every citizen. It is likely to be a year of destiny, for abroad things have reached such a pass that, as one writer summed it up, they must soon grow either much worse or much better. Christmas shopping is now over, and all at the various post offices must have breathed a deep sigh of relief when the last post sounded and the avalanche of cards and parcels came to an end. And a second item. Further outbreaks of foot and mouth disease have been reported, making the circle of restricted areas around the centre of Hampshire even more complete. Following the confirmation of an outbreak at Lyndhurst, there came on Tuesday reports of an outbreak near Staines, which necessitated the closing of Windsor Great Park. The total of cases reported in this part of the country reached 52 on Thursday.
And now two items from 50 years ago, 1963. The Chandler's Ford skyscraper scheme received a setback on Friday when the County Planning Committee decided to recommend to the Minister of Housing and Local Government that the scheme's second phase be turned down as premature and overdeveloped use of the land. Fears were expressed about Chandler's Ford becoming a dormitory town for Southampton. And the second item, the first step towards a multi-storey car park in Winchester was taken on Wednesday night, when Winchester City Council agreed to form a joint liaison committee with the County Council. it will carry out preliminary work for a joint scheme for the redevelopment of the area at the rear of the County Council offices, bounded by Sussex Street, Tower Street and Tower Road, as two- or three-decked car park with a canteen and such future buildings as may be found necessary and appropriate above it.
25 years ago, 1988. Environment Secretary Mr. Nicholas Ridley wants 1,000 more houses built in the Chandler's Ford growth area, but he has not said where. Now Pelham Homes of Sevenoaks and F. Goulden and Sons of Romsey, in asking to put up 750 homes on 123 acres, mostly at Broadgate Farm, Ampfield, have come up with their answer. They suggest the other 250 houses could be fitted in south of the railway line. Most of Todd's Copse has been designated a countryside heritage area, so the copse will be safe except for a small portion. And the second paragraph. The Church of England's failure to give uncritical support to the government has resulted in a politically motivated newspaper campaign against the Church and the Archbishop of Canterbury, claims the Dean of Winchester. The very Reverend Trevor Beeson writes of a campaign dating from the Falkland service of 1982, which was much less triumphalist than many in government circles had hoped for.
Thank you. That concludes historical. Now we move on to Chronicle comment, the editorial comment read by Robin.
And this week it is with the title Honouring the Unsung Heroes. While it was right that the country's Olympians were recognised in the New Year honours list, it is to the legion of unsung heroes across Hampshire and elsewhere that we take our hats off. Not for them the chance to achieve fame, fortune and glory, or to go down in the sporting history books, however richly deserved that might be. No, these ordinary men and women only had one objective, to selflessly help those who are in need of their support. Like Hermione Golding, who was awarded a British Empire Medal for services to charity and the community in Winchester. Mrs. Golding, 76, said, "I feel very embarrassed by this because there are so many other people who do much more than I do. Winchester is bulging with people who do an awful lot for charity." And then there is Naomi House fundraiser Lucy Jane Lewis, awarded an MBE, and John Underhill, an MBE for voluntary services to the Royal British Legion in Hampshire, and Scout leader Carolyn Derbyshire, another MBE recipient. The list goes on. Winchester, and indeed Hampshire, really is bulging with good-hearted people.
Thank you. Now we finally have First Person, read by Jerry.
Which comes this week from George Hayter and is called A Geo-Culinary Experience. Where Cornwall so brilliantly leads, could we in Hampshire modestly follow? Or at least could our tea shops? Our West Country cousins have more or less monopolised a hot pastry snack by establishing the brand name Cornish Pasty. One enterprising firm makes the things in Cornwall and then exports them to the rest of Britain through a network of its shops stretching from Guildford to Glasgow. There's one in Winchester High Street. Making and serving pasties has become a big earner for Cornwall, helping to attract tourists as well as cash. But only the most patriotic Cornishman can believe a pasty from Cornwall tastes better than one baked over the border in Plymouth, or made anywhere else in Britain for that matter. I reckon Hampshire cooks have the cunning to pull off a similar ruse. Alsford has already demonstrated what can be done with a festival championing the county's wholesome watercress. This annual celebration in the self-styled watercress capital of the world, attracts food enthusiasts from far and wide. Anything else? The symbol of the county is the Hampshire hog, but with hog roasts already widespread, it's unlikely that the public will adopt the phrase Hampshire hog roast. No, we need some other rural and traditional-sounding menu item to attract high-spending visitors from London and elsewhere. So I've come up with a concept that could take Hampshire into the culinary stratosphere occupied by regional delicacies like Somerset cider, Yorkshire pudding and the Eccles cake. What you have to appreciate about marketing is that the taste of the product isn't all that important. What matters is the name. Take carrot cake. This is a foul-tasting recipe full of strings of coarse root vegetable, but with the alliterative title, it is a mouth-watering winner, sounding folksy, quirky, and environmentally commendable. What sounds even better than carrot cake? Swede cake. I'm suggesting that Hampshire growers and tourism bosses produce and market millions of Hampshire Swede cakes. Those three words will prove an irresistible attraction for anyone in London or the Barren North. The phrase smacks of a southern sunshine life in the good old days, with Farmer Giles and his shire horses ploughing a fertile furrow. I've baked some prototypes to test on friends down from London. They said they tasted all right. But when I told them they were made of Swede, they were much more interested, excited even. It was as if their journey had been given cultural meaning through a geo-culinary experience. I believe Britons beyond our border could be enticed to travel here en masse for a taste of real Hampshire Swede cake. To me, Swede cake tastes worse than carrot cake. I admit that, but it sounds absolutely brilliant.
Thank you. I'll try and get some Swede cake for our next session, perhaps in the studio. And now we move on to items of general news, Claire.
Veterans celebrate medal victory. Recognition at last for Arctic convoy heroes. It has taken 70 years, but the bravery of Hampshire war veterans during the Second World War has finally been recognised. Veterans of the Arctic convoys got what they have been campaigning for when David Cameron announced they would get medals after a long fight for recognition. The Prime Minister told MPs he had accepted the recommendations of a review of military medals carried out by former diplomat Sir John Holmes. It also means a clasp will be awarded to veterans of RAF Bomber Command. Sir John has recommended, and I fully agree, there will be an Arctic Convoy Star Medal, he announced in the House of Commons. I am very pleased that some of the brave men of the Arctic convoys will get the recognition they so richly deserve for the very dangerous work they did. Described as the worst journey in the world by Sir Winston Churchill, the servicemen of the Arctic convoys endured unimaginable hardships in order to keep supply lines open to Russia during the Second World War. Yet when they sought formal recognition of their efforts, they were repeatedly rebuffed on grounds of protocol until now. Among those who will receive the Arctic Convoy Star Medal is 88-year-old John Kilford, who is believed to be only Arctic Convoy war veteran left living in Winchester. Mr. Kilford from Colesmead, Otterbourne, said, "They're a bit late and have dragged their heels, but I'm pleased to get it, of course. Just a bit sorry that so many have passed away." Mr. Kilford added, "I hope I'm still here in 6 months' time. At the moment, I'm feeling all right." Another is Roy Dykes, who's 92, from Whitchurch, who has been a member of the Winchester Royal Naval Association for more than 20 years and served on HMS Honeysuckle between 1941 and 45. Mr. Dyke said he was disappointed to hear it will take the Ministry of Defence 6 months to decide how to manufacture the medals. He said, "It was excellent news, but we have waited long enough. It's been 2.5 years with this new government, and we've heard nothing, in spite of the fact Mr. Cameron promised to give us a medal. We came out of the war having fought, and the fight just continued. It's very frustrating. 16 years, and it's still going to take them 6 months to make up their minds. But the award is brilliant news, and it will be worth the wait when I've got the medal in my hands." Southampton man Alan Beer, who's 87, was an able seaman for the Royal Navy in the Arctic Convoy of 1945. Mr. Beer, who also served at D-Day and in the Pacific, said, "I assumed it wasn't going to happen, so this is very good news." The great-grandfather of six, who was on board HMS Belfast for the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Thames pageant, said he was just 18 when he served in the convoy. He said, "It was very cold, probably minus 20 C, rough and wet. I spent a lot of the time being sick, but you just accepted it. I wasn't heroic. I just got on with what I had to do. There were many people who did so much more." Of the 66,000 sailors who took part in the Arctic convoys, only 200 are alive today. The government has said that the families of convoy veterans who have passed away will be eligible to collect medals in their honour. And with this article, there's a picture of an Arctic convoy ship and also of Mr. Roy Dykes.
40s style rekindled thanks to Vocal Trio. Sally Churchwood speaks to the Spitfire sisters about their love of 1940s clothes, makeup, and music. With their bright red lipstick, WRAF uniforms, and eyeliner stocking lines up the back of their legs, the Spitfire sisters look as if they have stepped straight out of a 1940s tea dance. The Hampshire Trio are part of a growing resurgence of interest in all things vintage, especially the Second World War era. There are probably several reasons for the rise in the popularity of the period. Our difficult times with the struggling economy, unemployment, crime, and global terrorism may be encouraging us to seek the comfort of what seems, in retrospect, like a simpler time. Yes, the war was going on, but the appeal of supportive communities with people pulling together for the greater good is strong, calling to us across the decades, which have also blunted the memory of the harsh reality of war. Anna Harding of the Spitfire Sisters feels that there is a strong association in people's minds between community and the war era. The Second World War is the biggest thing in living memory or recent history for a lot of people, said the 25-year-old student and music teacher from Winchester. It's that whole thing of trying to keep your spirits up and pull together. Last year, with the Olympics and Jubilee, was a real community year. When you look at the marketing for it all, it was in a very 1940s style, with the long tables at street parties and the Union Jack bunting. As for the Spitfire sisters, they all absolutely love swing music. "I wouldn't know why you wouldn't like it," says 26-year-old Louisa Rivolta, a music teacher. "What's not to like about swing? Every year when I was growing up, we would have Christmas Day with the Andrews sisters," she says, referring to the legendary Close Harmony Trio who entertained Allied troops during the Second World War with hits like "Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree" and who inspired the Spitfire Sisters. Anna agrees. I didn't think anyone else knew the Andrews sisters. It was one of those things my mum used to play in the car. I think we always loved it. Louisa and Anna, along with the third sister, Hannah Williams, met at Encore Youth Theatre in Winchester and began performing as the Spitfire Sisters a year ago. Their name reflects both the era that they represent and the fact that they, like the Spitfire, which was manufactured at the Supermarine factory on the bank of the Itchen, come from Hampshire. Their music has broad appeal. They have played everywhere from birthday parties to retirement homes via lots of jubilee events and weddings. The music has a wide audience, said Louisa. There are people who remember it from the first time round, but we are also introducing it to a new generation. The women make an effort to create an authentic look, from eyeliner stocking lines when they are wearing their replica WRAF uniforms, tea dresses or Land Army outfits. It's not just the music that people like, it's the hair, the makeup and the clothes, says Louisa. I love the glamour of it. The films that came out at around that time as well. I think for a lot of people, that's what glamour is. It's the 1940s look. For more information about the Spitfire Sisters, visit spitfiresisters, that's all one word, .blogspot.co.uk. And the article is illustrated by two large pictures of the Spitfire Sisters, one in uniform and one in civilian dresses.
Happy occasions are twice as nice. It was a baby bonanza when five sets of twins were born at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital within a week over the festive period, and another new arrival made her appearance in the early hours of New Year's Day. Sister Judy Simpson said, "It's very unusual to see five twins so close together. On average, I would say we get maybe one a month. There's no medical reason for there being more twins, though. It's just pure chance." Sophia and Philip Cheshire started the boom on December the 17th, when daughters Nina and Tess were born 6 weeks early. Nina, older by 2 minutes, weighed 4 pounds 10 ounces, and Tess weighed just 2 pounds 14 ounces. Sophia, 31, of Grange Close St. Cross, said, "This was a lovely early Christmas present, but not quite the Christmas we'd planned, as they were 6 weeks early." They were followed by two sets of twins from families who live in the same street in Eastleigh, but had never met before. Emily Anthony, 22, and Stephen Webb, 28, of Twyford Road, Eastleigh, had Harvey and Lily May on December the 18th, with the babies weighing 4 pounds 8 ounces and 5 pounds 8 ounces, respectively. Then on December the 23rd, Bino and Rena Varghese welcomed twin boys Nathan and Nishon, 2 pounds 4 ounces and 2 pounds 6 ounces. Rena, 38, who is a nurse, said, "We'd never met each other before, but now we're sharing a room. Our street is going to get a lot busier now." Emily, a chef, added, "There are twins on my dad's side of the family and in Stephen's family too, so I think this has all been fate." Karen and Rob Convery faced the longest wait to bring home their sons, Charlie and George, 2 pounds 9 ounces and 2 pounds 3 ounces respectively, after they came 11 weeks early on December the 19th. Karen, 40, an office administrator of Westmoreland Way Chandler's Ford, said, "They clearly didn't want to miss Christmas and wanted to meet Santa." Rob added, "Well, it's annoying because we can't give them a baby's first Christmas stocking next year because they came just in time for this one." Both boys are healthy and are expected to leave hospital in February. Meanwhile, little Lexi didn't let 2013 get very old before she made her appearance as one of the earliest New Year babies. It was 12:30 a.m. when she was born at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Mum and Dad, Tanya and Daniel Patterson Williams from Chilbolton, were delighted by her arrival, weighing 6 pounds 14 ounces and 2 weeks early. Lexi is their first child. And there are five lovely pictures of very happy parents cuddling their newborn babies.
The tag system aims to beat rural thefts. Agricultural machinery worth £5 million has been given the latest high-tech security marking thanks to Test Valley Farm Watch. 57 vehicles from 12 farms have been marked with the Cesar Data Tag system, which includes a sticker with a unique serial number, but more importantly, covers the machine with thousands of microdots. Ruth Harper-Adams, co-coordinator of Test Valley Farm Watch, explained that police and customs officers have scanners which can detect the dots which tell them who the vehicle belongs to. Even if a vehicle is stolen and broken up, one of the parts will have a dot linking it to the owner, she said. The tagging was paid for with the aid of a £1,000 grant from the Home Office via the Test Valley Community Safety Partnership. FarmWatch was able to get a discount by making a block booking with DataTag. Mrs. Harper-Adams said that there had been an increase in the theft of farm vehicles, and it is thought most of them are stolen to order and sent abroad. Police have the powers to stop a tractor on the road. If the vehicle has a data tag sticker and is not being driven by the owner, they can check that it's not been stolen. Test Valley Farm Watch may do further tagging sessions in the future if there is sufficient interest. For more details, contact 07810 866 836. And there's a picture of the tag team of Ian Bradwell from Broadlands Estates, Ruth Harper-Adams, Test Valley Farm Watch, PCSO Melissa Rowell, Country Watch, and PC Brian Pittman of Country Watch.
Winchester ranked in top 40 for quality of life. Winchester remains one of the best places to live in the UK, according to a new survey. But the city has slipped out of the top 30 in the latest Halifax Quality of Life report, a study of 405 areas based on such barometers as education, housing, health and crime. The nationwide study also measured the effects of traffic flows, broadband access, and even the weather. The city ranked 34th in 2012, dropping 5 places from 29th in 2011. In 2010, Winchester came in at 18. But City Councillor leader Keith Wood said he did not believe there was any decline in the desirability of Winchester. He said, "I'm not really worried, as these surveys come and go, and it all depends on how you measure things. The housing market and the economy here are extremely strong, and we are doing all we can to maintain that, and that is why people want to be here. To be in or around the top 30 out of 400 plus shows just how Winchester is still a very popular place to live." But he added, "There were problems the council is keen to tackle to increase resident satisfaction." He said, "There is a good package in Winchester for residents, but there are problems. There is a lot more to do in the city," he said. "We have problems with traffic flow, and we are working on a plan to deal with that. And we have problems with the carbon footprint, which is a lot to do with the traffic. The real problem is 40% of traffic goes through the city rather than to it. We need a road system where people can get from one side of the city to the other more easily. But health and welfare is generally good, and this is a good reflection of the attractiveness of the city. It's a good place to be, Councillor Wood added. Hampshire neighbour Fareham was one place behind Winchester itself, down two places from 33rd last year. But Winchester was more than 200 places above Southampton, which ranked 237th, while Portsmouth was 246th. Basingstoke, the Test Valley, New Forest and Eastleigh all finished in the top 100, while the Isle of Wight was 150th. But all were beaten by Hart in the area around Fleet in North Hampshire, which came top overall for the second year in a row, scoring consistently higher in every category. And the South East dominated the table, with 30 of the top 50 coming from the region and making up the entire top five. Meanwhile, the sunniest place in the UK was once again the Isle of Wight, where residents enjoyed 37.4 hours of sunshine a week, compared to the countrywide average of 29.7 hours.
Get help with staying warm. The County Council is again offering elderly people advice and practical help to beat the cold this winter. Cold weather not only makes life uncomfortable, but can also lead to serious health problems, such as respiratory diseases, asthma, depression, heart disease and strokes. Hampshire County Council's Hitting the Cold Spots scheme is building on last year's initiative, with another campaign targeted at older and vulnerable people who may struggle to keep warm and pay the bills during the cold winter months. Hitting the Cold Spots aims to give them immediate and practical advice on reducing energy bills, increasing available income, as well as keeping warm. Depending on the situation, further help may also be on offer with free home visits by Hitting the Cold Spots advisors, access to efficient oil-filled radiators, and grants to assist with hot water and heating repairs using Buy with Confidence traders. In addition, information packs on how to keep warm at home are available via local voluntary community organisations. These include a room thermometer, cosy snood, children's activity pack, and useful information. The scheme, funded by the Department of Health, has already helped 300 Hampshire residents this year with issues such as switching to a cheaper energy tariff, accessing grants to cope with winter fuel emergencies, debt and benefit advice, and assessment for mains gas connection. Councillor Felicity Hindson, Executive Member for Adult Social Care at Hampshire County Council, said, "I'm very pleased that our Hitting the Cold Spots scheme is helping people to keep warm and addressing winter fuel poverty among older and vulnerable people. The scheme offers a dedicated free advice line with a real person to speak to who can give immediate practical advice and follow up on the tougher problems. To find out more information, call the dedicated free phone advice line on 0800 804 8601.
This article is headed All Hands on Deck for a Capital Adventure. Cub Scouts enjoyed a weekend camping out on a Tudor warship. The 33 Cub Scouts from the 14th Stockbridge and 19th Middle Wallop packs spent the night on the gun deck of the Golden Hind, a full-sized reconstruction of Drake's famous ship, which is moored on the Thames. During their trip to London, the Cubs travelled on many different forms of transport, including by train, underground, light railway, bus, Skyline cable car, riverboat, and on foot. They toured the sights of the capital and had their photograph taken outside No. 10 Downing Street. They didn't see the Prime Minister, but they did meet the resident Moggy Larry. Tim Selwood, Cub Scout leader, said, after a meal in Chinatown, they took the train home to a well-earned night's sleep. And there's a picture of them all outside No. 10, looking very happy.
And the next piece is not, in fact, a current news item, but is from Chronicles of the Past, it being from the Hampshire Chronicle of Friday, January the 14th, 1972, with the headline, No Praise Too High for Pantomime Producer. The Winchester Dramatic Society have set new standards for amateur pantomime with Dick Whittington at the Guildhall. From the smallest part in the chorus to the stars, producer Geoffrey Burnaby has moulded a polished and spectacular entertainment. The wit of scriptwriter John S. Robinson, who also took one of the leading roles, is enlivened by slapstick clowning and precise acting. Playing the title role in sparkling style is Veronica Davis, no stranger to the Winchester pantomime stage. This is her fourth leading role, and arguably her most successful. Playing opposite her, as Alice, is her old partner Sheila Styling, whose experience in professional cabaret and films adds a great deal to the polish of the show. Out-and-out clowning comes from Nick Murphy and John Sykes, mates on Dick's ship, while Norman Kemish is Dame Lavinia, supported by George Budd as her husband. A performance of huge proportions comes from John Robinson as the Wadir of Imphat, whose gratitude to Tommy, Dick's cat, played by Cheryl Phipps, for killing the rats, saves the lives of the shipwrecked mariners. A host of other parts are performed with great gusto and ability to round off an almost faultless production. The musical direction, in the hands of Sylvia Anscombe, is just right, and no praise can be too high for the producer Geoffrey Burnaby. His flair for the spectacular and for bringing the very best out of his performers has reached new heights in the current production. And the article is illustrated by three photographs of the production showing Bernard Gingle as Sean dancing with Veronica Davis, and also funny men George Budd with Dame Norman Kemish, and another photograph of Sean and Dick Whittington with Tommy the Cat on the road to London.
Festive cheer on the cards. Children, at Broughton Primary School picked up their favourite colouring pens to make Christmas cards for soldiers serving in Afghanistan over the holiday season. All 78 children at the school, six of whom have a parent serving in the army, made the cards for the troops to spread a little festive cheer. The idea came from mum of five, Tina Reddy, whose husband, Corporal Andy Reddy, has recently returned from a six-month tour of Afghanistan. Andy is home now, but I have friends whose husbands were there, and we have friends currently deployed. So it seemed nice to send cards to those who don't have children and won't get a handmade card for Christmas, said Tina. So I approached the school, who were really keen to get involved. The children wrote messages from themselves and the school in the cards before they were posted to Afghanistan to be sent to soldiers across Helmand. Neil Hardy, Broughton's head teacher, said, "We've never done anything like this before, but I think it helps the children on a wider geographical basis to understand things that are going on. It's been a good opportunity to show that we understand that at Christmas not everybody is going to be home eating Christmas dinner with their family." And the children loved the idea when we suggested it to them. They were all keen to take part and bring that bit of happiness. And there's a photograph of two of the little girls at Broughton Primary School making their cards with the head teacher looking on.
Wendy gives her 50th pint of blood. A Winchester shop manager may have given the greatest gift of all over the festive season, helping to save a life. Wendy Winsall, who is pictured with this article, manager of Your Life, Your Style in the Brook Shopping Centre, donated her 50th pint of blood on Christmas Eve to the NHS. Wendy, who's 55, has been giving blood since 1980 and said she was inspired to do it after receiving a blood transfusion herself when she was 8, after suffering a hemorrhage when her tonsils were removed. "I will always remember having that transfusion and my time in hospital, and so when I was older, I wanted to do it. I then found out I had the rare Rh negative AB blood type, and it seemed even more important to donate. The NHS says my blood is used in the special care baby unit, which is great, although I do it because it can help anyone. I wanted to fit it in during 2012, her 50th donation, because it was so good for the country and there was a special feel-good factor. It was a nice way to end the year and will hopefully make a nice present for someone." Wendy, who lives near Romsey, was honoured by the NHS for her achievement, receiving a special engraved pen and a certificate. And there's a picture of her smiling happily with her gold certificate.
Worries over village development. Concern is growing in a village near Winchester about development on fields on the edge of the settlement. Villagers in Colden Common are worried that land off Upper Moors Road will be targeted by developers. Their fears have been highlighted in a community planning exercise to draw up a village design statement, which has been adopted by the City Council. The village design statement, the first for the village, has been drawn up by villagers over the last 4 years. It will now be used by City Council planners when considering local issues. Villager Wendy Williams, commenting on the VDS, said, "These meadows are of great environmental, historic and aesthetic value and need to be described as such in the VDS. Another, Caroline Muscat, raised fears about the primary school being unable to cope with children from any new development, as it is already full. A City Council report to the Local Development Framework Committee said, "The VDS is concerned with guiding the design of future development, rather than establishing whether and where future development should be."
Police issue description of con man. Police searching for a callous con man who duped an elderly woman out of £200 have issued a description of the man they would like to question. 79-year-old Patricia Morrison was left traumatised after being visited on 3 occasions by the thief before he eventually made off with the cash. But the pensioner, a keen artist, used her skills to produce a picture of the bogus builder who stole the money. She let the man into her home near Winchester after he claimed to have carried out work for her neighbours. She added, "That night I couldn't sleep, so I painted a portrait of him as a way of getting him out of my head." Grandmother Patricia is a member of Alsford and Chandler's Ford art clubs and took 3 hours to do the pastel portrait. Police say the trickster is white, aged around 32, about 5'7", of athletic build, with brown eyes, a plump face, gaps between his teeth, and fresh cuts over his left eye. He was wearing a grey or navy fleece jumper and a high-vis jacket. He also spoke very slowly. PC Cassandra Hakins said, "This is a horrible crime where an elderly woman has been tricked into handing over money. If you saw anyone suspicious in the Compton area on December the 8th, or had someone cold calling at your door, contact the police. Genuine companies will not call at your home offering to complete work without a prior appointment.
Survey into 20 mile per hour limits. Some 10,000 people are being asked for their views on new 20 mile per hour limits in 10 pilot areas across the county, including Winchester. The County Council is sending letters and questionnaires to people living in residential streets affected by the proposed lower limits. The areas include Stanmore and Highcliffe in Winchester, Cherbourg Road, Eastleigh, Hythe in the New Forest, Wallington Village in Fareham, Floral Way, Andover, and Whitchurch. The total cost of the scheme is about £250,000, with the Winchester City Council picking up the bills for Stanmore and Highcliffe.
Panto Stars Light Up Children's Ward. Panto Stars, at the Theatre Royal's festive production, took time out of their busy schedule to cheer poorly youngsters in hospital. Stars from Aladdin visited the children's ward at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and entertained with some silly jokes, surprises and treats. Princess Jasmine, played by Felicity McCormack, the Empress, played by Carly Hughes, and Widow Twanky, played by Julian Eardley, from the Winchester production, spent the day lifting the spirits of young patients in Northbrook Ward. They arrived with chocolate and plenty of games to play with the children. A spokesman for the theatre said, "It's something that the cast love to do, especially when the children are feeling unwell. It's a really rewarding visit for them." Aladdin at the Theatre Royal ends its run this Sunday, January the 6th. And the article is illustrated by a photograph of the Empress of China, Widow Twanky and Princess Jasmine, all in costume, around the bed of Ellie O'Donnell, 8, and they're handing her a tin of Quality Street.
Floods don't dampen spirit of tradition. Hundreds of people turned out across Hampshire to see the horses and hounds at two traditional Boxing Day hunting meets. Members of the Hursley Hambledon Hunt gathered at the Buck's Head pub in Mionstoke, while the water-soaked field outside the Balmer Lawn Hotel in Brockenhurst was the place for the New Forest hounds to set off. They met on the day that the Environment Secretary, Owen Paterson, signalled there was no imminent prospect of a change on the hunting laws. Hunting foxes with dogs was outlawed 7 years ago, which means hunts across the UK now have to chase an artificial scent laid in advance. And there is a photograph of a very traditional-looking scene with three huntsmen setting off through great pools of water with their dogs.
Hotel wins two awards in 24 hours. A Winchester hotel is celebrating winning two awards in 24 hours. The Holiday Inn was awarded a silver for sustainable tourism at the Beautiful South Awards, which recognises businesses and destinations across the tourism industry for their customer service and high standards. Within a matter of hours, the Holiday Inn was being recognised again at a ceremony in Dublin. On behalf of her team, General Manager Siobhan Thomason accepted the Priority Club Members Award for the highest level of excellence in customer loyalty. She said, "To win this award for the second consecutive year is a real achievement and it shows our commitment to customer service and loyalty." Sales Manager Sarah Waddington received the Beautiful South Award for the Holiday Inn. She said, "Many of our hotel visitors are now choosing our hotel based upon its green credentials, and the award will also highlight the first UK four-star New Generation Holiday Inn." The Holiday Inn Winchester is delighted to be recognised in this way. The award was presented by Tourism South East Chairman Ken Robinson and Heart FM presenter Toby Anstis. Mr. Robinson said, "The award winners are truly the best in class this year and show their determination to provide their visitors and guests with memorable experiences." And there's a picture of five of the folk at the hotel award ceremonies.
Cash for Causes grants. Charities and groups in the Winchester district are set to benefit from the city's annual Bonfire Night fundraiser. Winchester Round Table has already started to allocate funding from the £30,000 raised last November to worthy causes in the area. But now £5,000 of the funds raised will be allocated to the Cash for Causes scheme, run in conjunction with the Hampshire Chronicle. Applications from charitable and non-profit-making groups can be made to Winchester Round Table by filling in a coupon which will be published on the community news page in the Hampshire Chronicle over the next 8 weeks. Donations will typically be in the region of £500, although in certain circumstances more might be made available, subject to the discretion of the Round Table.
Teenager charged with arson. A homeless teenager has been charged after a Winchester church was broken into and severely damaged by fire. Andrew Richardson, 18, of no fixed abode, has been charged with arson and criminal damage between December the 21st to 23rd at St Bartholomew's Church in King Alfred Place, Hyde. He appeared before Basingstoke magistrates last Friday to be remanded in custody and was due in court again on Wednesday. Extensive damage was caused inside the building, including to a table, pew, Christmas tree, stained glass window and kneeling pads. The church had to be closed over Christmas for repairs. Richardson is also alleged to have caused criminal damage to the doors of St Peter's Church in Jury Street, but an allegation of burglary at St Peter's has been withdrawn.
Park ride ends. An unauthorised park and ride at Winchester Rugby Football Club has ended. City Council enforcement officers investigated the service in which Denplan employees were parking at the club in Abbots Barton and getting a taxi to work at company offices in Hyde Street. A council spokeswoman said, "We believe that those arrangements have now come to an end. Denplan have bought season tickets for the Cattle Market car park."
And that concludes our extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Linda Vincent, Keith Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, goodbye from our readers, Claire Porter.
Bye.
Robin Freeman.
Goodbye.
And Jerry Tuff.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. Remember, when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.